Hello and welcome to a new episode of Building Minnesota Rocker. Today we have a very special episode because we have another one of our players on with us. I am Ashley, aka Midnight, of course, the director of content here for Minnesota Rocker and Version 1. Shout out Version 1, the grid is today. I'm mad hype. Brett's all V1'd out. Brett Diamond, the COO here at Rocker and Version 1. And then, of course, today we have Mike, aka Major Maniac, Triple M, coming on the podcast today to just kind of like say what's up. Kind of love to ask you how the team's doing, how everything's going this year, but also just want to like get to know you a little bit better. I think you're one of the more like kind of dark horse type guy for the team. You have a lot that you do for the team, and so just kind of want to get into that. So welcome.
I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
Heck yeah. So I guess Brett, where do you think we should start? We just went over all of our topics, and I don't even know where to begin. Do we want to maybe talk about like kind of how did Mike get here specifically with us? And then maybe we could talk more about his career in general. Kind of wanted to hear like roster mania, how that went. Cause you guys were obviously, you know, talking quite a bit in the off season. That's how we got here. So tell me a little bit about that, Brett. We'll start with you.
You want me to talk about how I got here in roster mania?
What I'm
kind of curious about from your perspective, so you know, during roster mania, it was interesting for us. Like you and Preston were always like a package deal, but a lot of the things that were out there publicly weren't necessarily linking you guys. But every conversation we ever had with you or with Priesta was always about the two of you. And obviously like we were, we got the four we wanted from day one, right? Like we couldn't have been more excited with the roster that, you know, that we have here. But you know, like we were on pins and needles, like watching the rumors that were all over social media and everything like that. But very curious, like what was that period of time like from your perspective? And would just love to hear kind of your take on it from having gone through it recently.
Yeah. So to backtrack all the way to the Sunday before or the Sunday after Champs, obviously we lost to Dallas in that grand finals. That following Monday. I mean, it wasn't known to the public, but a lot of the players already knew. Some players, I don't know if they actually did know, but we at Atlanta FaZe knew, like, the switch to 4v4 was happening. So in my head, there was three scenarios. It was either I stay on Atlanta FaZe, I go off and find my place in a home somewhere else, or the other scenario, which I found out later on, was me and Preston are both off the team and we try to find a place together. Cause that would be, I had no problem going off and finding a place and playing for another organization on my own. But if it was me and Preston off the team, I think Preston is one of the most talented players in the league. Very overlooked and underrated for whatever reason. So I knew in my head that I wanted to stick with him over anybody in the entire league. So yeah, I was in conversations with him, but the whole time we weren't necessarily a package deal. He was exploring options on his own. I was also exploring options on my own. And we were also exploring options as like a package deal. You know what I mean? So yeah, I had conversations with a ton of players. I was on the phone we lost that Sunday. I was on the phone Monday for 8-9 days straight, just talking to all kinds of players. And this was really my first roster mania. So it was all really new to me. And I was just trying to lay all my cards out and see what my best options were and the best route for me to take. And it's not even just team wise, but organization wise. Cause I want to play for an organization that cares about their players, everything like that. Exactly why I'm here. So yeah, getting the team that I wanted and playing for the organization that I wanted were my two biggest concerns. And yeah, I mean, at first Preston was discussing with other options. So it looked for me as I was going to go off on my own. But after just numerous talks with other players, with you guys, I feel like we really ended up in the best spot we could, and we made the best decision possible. And we just, yeah, we literally, I told everybody that I've talked to about this, I just tell them, like, it was such a stressful time period for me, because not only are we coming off a loss, but we're jumping straight into Roster Mania. Like, for I was really waking up on the, like, waking up to phone calls, and just trying to figure out everything, because at the end of the day, like this is my career, this is my job, this is my livelihood. And with that switched from 5v5 to 4v4, that cuts 12 players out of the league. I wasn't, for me personally, like, worried about losing a spot and not getting on a team, because I know my potential and what I bring to a team and what I have to offer. So it was more so just trying to figure out the best team, best organization.
But, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I go ahead, finish. Sorry.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, and I don't want to overplay my part and speak on conversations that I shouldn't. But yeah, I mean, I talked with numerous players, I talked with numerous organizations, and where I'm here now is where I'm supposed to be. I'll just leave it at that.
Heck yeah.
Awesome. Love it. Yeah, one of the things I was going to ask you, and you sort of answered it, is whether that period was something, you know, some people sort of are excited by that and kind of like the game of free agency, and some people, yeah, you know, some people aren't that into it. But it is tough, like you said, that's a tough turnaround to come right off of champs and have to be addressing that.
Yeah, no, it's, I like how you use the word game, because it really is a game outside of just the game itself, Call of Duty, because you really need to know how to present yourself, how to act, how to, you know, manage and maybe even potentially build a roster that you think can win, and present that to an organization, be able to take those kind of phone calls with these people that run these organizations. So yeah, it really is a game in itself, and I learned that a bit last year.
Yeah, I remember. I called you
yeah,
the first.
Yeah,
I remember. We only talked, I think, once, because.
Yeah, I did learn. Yeah, we did. I did learn that a bit last year. But I didn't get to really grow into it, just because I was kind of set on where I wanted to play and I had that offer on the table. But yeah, this year was really a learning experience entirely. Just the whole Roster Mania, just mess itself, was really just a good learning experience. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad I made the best of my situation.
Yeah, it's an absolutely crazy time. It used to happen kind of frequently throughout the Call of Duty seasons of past, right? Like, even like there'd be Roster Mania before the game came out, after the first tournament of the game, before the first LAN, after the first LAN. Like, there was kind of an always moving kind of target, and now it's kind of all being condensed into one. Like, I mean, and especially Liz, I'm hoping the league fixes this for next year. The day after, they're like 4v4, by the way, and then it all just that pops the bottle of champagne while Dallas is still popping theirs, right? Like, it's just, there was no like reset at all. But it was impressive to see like how much really happened in a short period of time. We have a literal new roster, and I couldn't be more excited to have you here, obviously, and Priesta. I think both of you said that Priesta is kind of overlooked or underrated. I 1000% agree. We pursued him not last roster maybe, but before as well, and we just he's so, I don't want to say undervalued, because that's incorrect. He's doing his thing and he's getting recognition, of course, but like to the level that he deserves, I don't think he's there yet. And I think the same thing for you as well. You know, Priesta, especially, like, didn't he run a SOG, a Maddox, and an ICR at one point?
Yeah, he did. He played all three roles in that game.
He's nuts. And everyone's like, oh, he's just the sub. Or it's like, what? And then you too, like, you've kind of been harpooned into, oh, well, that's the main AR. That's what he's gonna be. But you're actually like not technically the main AR for this team, right? Like, you're a flex guy. So it's interesting how you know, you saw a lot of the hot takes about our new roster come through when it first got formed. They're like, well, who's the like quick person on the team? And, you know, maybe this can kind of lead us into the current affairs of Cold War and the meta and where we're at. But right now, and I've been following as closely as I can. I've been really busy, but is it two subs, two ARs right now? What's the meta like in Cold War, and what have scrims been like in this first, you know, just under a month of the game being out?
Yeah. Well, the meta right now is like, it's either a 2-2 split or a 3-1 split, just depending on the maps. And 3-1 split meaning three ARs, one sub.
Would you just look at that? No, I'm just kidding. But that's so, gross, right? Like, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, in my head, when I was like picturing our roster in my head, I was looking for a 2-2 split or potentially a 3-1 split AR-wise. I mean, over time, when people learn how to play the game and learn how to, like, when you have a submachine gun, it's easier to, when learning the game is easier with an AR, in my opinion, than it is with a sub. Like, in the beginning of every game, everybody's always using the AR. Everybody wants to run the AR just because it's just slow. You can chow whatever angles you want. But once you actually understand the game and the game modes and how the hardpoint rotations are supposed to be played, running a sub is just a lot easier. So I think over time it could potentially be three subs on a map, but I think that 2-2 split is going to solidify for most of the maps and modes. Maybe a 3-3-1 AR split, just depending on how, like, maybe on like some of the controls, like Moscow, for instance, Moscow hardpoint. But yeah, that 2-2 subs, like 2-2 sub and AR split is really like the meta right now. And I know Dylan really loves the AK-74U. Yeah. Preston loves running the AK-74U in the Krig on the other maps. So yeah, it's working out really well for us. And obviously Lamar is the main AR of the team. He's going to be running the Krig or the AK. And then for me, either the Krig, the AK. So it's really, I don't see an issue with like pacing or anything like that. And again, back to when I pictured the roster in my head, this game 4v4 with the switch to 4v4 is so much more fundamental heavy than just 5v5. You flood, trade out. There is fundamentals in 5v5, but with 4v4, it's a lot more team oriented. It's a lot more cross-firing. You get punished for not trading efficiently. So for example, in like hardpoint, certain maps, you want to count your blessings on rotation and just get pushed up and play a corner and just be annoying than it is to push up and then try to get into the new hill spawn. You want to just get pushed up, maybe get a kill or two, finesse, wait for your teammates, and then collapse together. There's really no, that's the pace I'm picturing in my head for the game and how it's going to be played out. So like I said, like when you have a player like Lamar and Attach and especially Preston, people that can communicate what they're doing and be disciplined on rotation and things like that, the whole slow like pace team is, it's such a bad argument, because you can, it's good to play slow, and then being over aggressive or too fast can be super punishing. So you got to have a good happy medium.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, especially, I mean, we've talked a lot on this podcast about the switch from 5v5 to 4v4. What does that mean? Well, it's kind of hard to, like, quantify that when the game wasn't out, right? But now it's out. We're playing. You guys are scrimming now. I've noticed you guys have started scrimming. That was awesome. Shout out to Accuracy, who just did a takeover on the channel. You guys played a scrim just before this. I heard it went pretty well. Catch the VOD. It's on the channel. And if you're listening on audio, talk about our YouTube channel, RockerMN. But I think, you know, you're 100% right that you have to play so much more fundamentally correct in 4v4 Call of Duty because of all the reasons you said, right? Like, if you just throw your lives at the hard point and it doesn't go your way, like before in 5v5, that was obviously if you lost the trade battle, that's bad. But now, especially with how hard point is, you might be like restarting a whole ass rotation before you really even want to, before you know it, because of those things. And I think, you know, with 4v4 and with the like kind of team speed, as you say, you guys, when the team came out, there was obviously comments like, oh, they're going to play really slow, or oh, they have three ARs, what's going on? Like, or two ARs, and, you know, not the quickest sub players in Priest and Attach, but, you know, it seems like Attach is really, like, taken to the sub role pretty well, like that quick entry person. And then, you know, Priest is just cracked all the time. That guy's nuts. Like watching the stream, I'm like, my eyes are going crossed by how quick he's moving and all this stuff he's doing. So I don't know. I'm really excited to see this obviously kind of like come to fruition. You know, once, you know, you see online tournaments start up and then obviously the league starting up, you know, next year. I couldn't be more excited for kind of day one. And another point too, not to pump up the content too much, but hey, that's why I'm here, baby, is to talk content. You had an insane search and destroy game that we actually just uploaded to the YouTube channel. Spoiler alert, they won in the first round. It was an ace from Major Maniac. It was nuts. I highly recommend you guys go watch it. It's an awesome gameplay. And one of the first things that I kind of said when Jake and Brian kind of shared like the news about the roster to me when this was kind of coming to fruition was that, damn, dude, this is going to be a good Search and Destroy team. How are you feeling about Search and Destroy in Cold War and just where the team's at? Because that is one of the most fundamental modes of all time. Where are you guys seeing yourselves?
Yeah, I think right now we look pretty good. We can be a lot better. And I mentioned the other day, actually, that like we just need to have consistent what am I looking for here?
Practice?
No, not consistent practice, but consistent like breaks and like tendencies that we can go back on. And like, say we go up a 2 or 3 round lead, we want to have a consistent setup to like off change the pace of the game. I was mentioning that the other day, and like my vision for S&D is always, I still think like it's such an overlooked game mode in the league, just because everybody's always thinking of like a respawn heavy team. But I mean, S&D is 2 games out of a best of 5 series. If you're a super heavy S&D team, I don't think it's necessarily that hard to steal a respawn. So to have that good balance between S&D and respawn, you're a really good team. So in my head, yeah, S&D is probably like the most important game mode to be good at. And that just comes with practice is important. But it's also, especially in like a tournament setting, being able to read and adapt to how the other team is playing, because S&D is never the same. Respawn, there's a lot of consistencies when you play a hard point. The hills are always the same. The rotations are usually the same. People play the same setups. But with S&D, people will call different strats. There could be a strat where two people late hit up a flank, fast hit a flank, full hit a bomb site. So it's really about just adapting and reading and predicting to what the other team is doing. So I think that's something that we need to be a little bit better at. But yeah, I mean, the game is still super fresh. I mean, people are going to be doing really bizarre things off the rip to just try different things and just to see what works. So over time, there'll be that consistency of being able to predict what the other team is doing. But yeah, like S&D, I think it actually plays really well. I mean, I'm the biggest fan of 4v4 S&D. Most people that have like watched my streams or anything in the past just knows like how much of a fan of S&D I am. Like, just I think it's just like the best competitive game mode like there is. Like, just one life, very team oriented, 6 rounds, things like that. So yeah, you gotta like be on your toes. Like, there's that clutching ability. Like in 5v5. There was like one or two, I think, in the 2 seasons. You can 1v5. It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard, especially in a tournament setting. But you can 1v4. Like, there's been multiple 1v4s. And the way I see it, you kill one person, it's 1v3. You kill one person, it's still 1v4 in 5v5. So that clutch ability is back now, which I really love. And yeah, like Search and Destroy 4v4 Treyarch is just something I've always enjoyed. So I'm super excited to just keep playing that and get better at it.
That's awesome. Can you talk a little bit about Control and your thoughts on that as a game mode, you know, particularly for fans of this team? That might not have been, you know, that may have just started following competitive Call of Duty last year, that may not have watched a ton of competitive Control. You know, would love to just understand a player's perspective on that. And how those strategies play out.
Yeah, so control is 30 lives per team, 30 and 30, and there's 2 points, an A and a B point. And there's two ways of winning. You either cap both points if you're on the offensive side, or you kill all the other enemies on the defensive side. And then defense, you win by just stopping them from capping the points and just draining all their lives. Me personally, my take on control, I absolutely love the game mode, way better than domination, way better than capture the flag, just because there's two ways to win. There's multiple ways to play the game mode. In Black Ops 4, for instance, you could have, I mean, even in this game, you could have a 10 life difference and it could look like you're losing, but you have that one good break on that last, for instance, B point. And you all stack as a team, hold a good setup, you win the round. So there's multiple ways to win, which I think is really cool. It just makes it competitive. It's very consistent. Like, the spawns are super consistent. I think the game mode is really good. It's pretty fundamental, and it worked really well in Black Ops 4. It's super team oriented. And if you're not playing, if you're on the defensive side and you're not, and a lot of these maps in this game especially are super defensive heavy, so if you're not playing those points well and not playing your life well and not finessing after you get a few kills pushing up and getting that map control, you're going to get punished by the team that's on O. Like, they're going to kill you out of your spots, stack the point, rotate over to the next. So I mean, yeah, my thoughts on control, I think it's a great competitive game mode.
I'm so thankful control is back. As someone who fiended over it in Black Ops 4, I'm really excited. Domination was, I mean, she's in the past. Okay, let's let her rock. Yeah.
It's entertaining to watch too. Like, it's,
yeah, control is
actually
amazing.
Like, especially if, like, there's, for instance, like a 5 life lead and like an 8 or 9 life lead, like, it's coming down to the wire. Everybody has to play their life really well. Their team has to work, you know, the angles perfectly. You literally only have one push. So yeah, I think it's entertaining to watch. It's competitive and it just works really well for 4v4 as well too.
It requires quite a bit more thought and strategy behind it too. Instead of domination, was like, especially last year with some of the maps were like, oh, well, this is the A heavily favored map, so whoever starts on that's going to get the lead, and then the other team's going to try to come back, and then maybe at the last minute or two it'll be kind of exciting.
Yep.
No more. Now it's like, okay, it's round two. This I think what another good point is, like, the S&D clutch factor that you brought up with 4v4, that same clutch factor is kind of thrown into control as well.
Yep.
Like, it's less about hoping you manipulate the spawns correctly, but more about how you actually push with your teammate to capture those points. So, you know, for those of you that maybe didn't watch Black Ops 4 when it was out competitively, hopefully you've at least played it. It's really fun in this game in Cold War. I'm really excited to see it, you know, played at the highest level. So
yeah.
Speaking of playing at the highest level, Major Maniac, how did you get to where you are now? And I know it's like a loaded question, and I know the road was really long. I know, you know, obviously last year placed second at Champs with Atlanta FaZe. This upcoming year we'll be getting number one with Rocker, no worries. And then, you know, before that you were on Gen G, which I remember Gen G in Black Ops 4 was, God, it was nuts watching you guys just show up and just demolish. So tell us a little bit about, like, how'd you get started? Why'd you start playing COD? And how did you kind of, like, go pro officially?
Yeah. So I started playing COD. I mean, I've been playing video games pretty much my whole life. I have an older brother, and me and him would always play, like, split screen, PlayStation 2 together, racing games, everything like that. So I've always kind of had, like, I've always enjoyed and had fun playing video games. I didn't start playing Call of Duty online until COD 4. It was the summer before sixth grade. I actually got a PS3 and I had online, and my older brother had his PS3. He lived in New York at the time. I was in North Carolina, and I hooked that up. I remember the first map I jumped into was like a bog free for all. Like, I didn't even play like a public match. I just played like a bog free for all with, like, you know, like the hill.
By yourself?
All that. No, just no, it was me. That? It was me. No, it was me, him, and his friend. It was just like a free for all, 3v3. Or just us three.
One.
Yeah, and like they just absolutely destroyed me. They just put me in the blender for like an hour. And then after that, yeah, we started playing because I don't know what it, we were just having fun, like just playing. Like I hadn't even played like a public match yet. And I mean, even before that, I played like Call of Duty, like I think it was Call of Duty Frontline, Call of Duty Big Red One. Like, oh, I played all those like on PS2, GameCube. I had every system like up. I had GameCube, PS2, PS3, Xbox 360. And up, and Black Ops 1 is when I switched to the Xbox 360, actually. So I did play MW2 on PS3. But yeah, competitively, I didn't start really playing until I would play GBs and stuff in Black Ops 2, but at the time it was never like really serious for me. I mean, it was serious because I wanted to like, we were actually like super competitive, like trying to get our game battles ranked down, all of that. If some people in the chat or whatever know, like GBXP was like,
that was life.
It was life back then. Like there wasn't like online tournaments or anything like that. So it was super competitive. It was really fun. At the time I was still playing baseball and I was also like moving a lot. I didn't really, and I don't want to get into it, but I couldn't play in an online tournament setting. I can discuss that off stream or whatever if you guys are curious, but I literally just couldn't. I was just restricted. But I did want to play online tournaments and stuff in Black Ops 2, AW and things like that, but I actually couldn't start playing tournaments until the end of AW. And that's when I really like just had a really good time. I mean, I started playing wagers, online tournaments, all that. And I was always super competitive because I've played baseball pretty much my entire life. So I'm just a super competitive person. And when it comes to like that team entity and just that, you know, that team environment, I really like. So yeah, I mean, I played wagers, tournaments, all that in AW. And then Black Ops 3 is where I actually really started taking it like kind of serious. I was still like underage and everything. So I was just streaming and playing all the online tournaments and just trying to just get my name out there. Basically, I didn't really have a, like, there's never like really a moment in my head where I was like, okay, I'm going to go pro in Call of Duty. I never really had like that moment for me. It was really like me playing in Black Ops 3. I didn't really play much in IW. When IW came out, I played in the very beginning. I won a bunch of like tournaments, the kickoffs, all of that. But I never had in my head like, yeah, it's time to go pro. It didn't happen. The flip didn't switch until I attended champs in IW and Optic One. I saw that happen. I'm like, okay, World War II. I'm competing on LAN, and because what changed my mind was, if I want to take this to the next level, and like me as a competitive person, I want to take this to the next level, I got to compete at the next level, you understand?
Yeah.
So like the S&D and all that, the ceiling is only so high. So I was like, if I want to be the best and prove that I am one of the best players in the game, S&D wise, and nobody believed in me or anything like that when it came to Respawn. So I knew I just had to prove myself. So World War II came out. It was I played with a bunch of S&D kids, S&D stars. It was me, Teddy Rex, Rambi and Mutex. We attended Dallas together. Actually, there's no like recording or footage or those open events, but I mean, I thought I played extremely well that first event of mine. I had a blast just playing on LAN. We actually should have made it to champ bracket, but some ruling happened with the refs. It was like 1 a.m. There was just a bunch of nonsense going on with threats and everything like that. So we ended up like losing at like 1 a.m. in the morning on that Saturday night. So we didn't end up making champ bracket, because if I would have made champ bracket my first event, that would have just got, it would have been easier for me to get my name out there.
Yeah.
So we played that event and we played like two events together. And then we attended, I think Seattle was my third event. And instead of Mutex, we played with another player. And it was just like the same thing. Like it just wasn't really going that well. And in my mind, I knew I understood the game in a way that Aiden, I got love for those guys, but in my head, like, I knew I needed to like branch out myself and play with players that understand respawn in that game mode better than they did and can maybe teach me a few things that I can pick up from. And Anaheim of World War II, I actually didn't have a team like 2 weeks before the event. So I was like, if I don't attend Anaheim, man, like if nobody's going to like give me a shot, like, am I going to even be able to do this? So I was like having thoughts of like, am I just going to not play all that? And eventually Mox Chance actually reached out to me and I played with him, Proto and Spoof at Anaheim. And I scrimmed with them like 2 weeks before the event. And actually like that was what jumpstarted and kickstarted for me. I always thought I was really good at World War II, like S&D and Respawn, but I just, nobody was really giving me a shot and nobody was like, because everybody just thought I was just the S&D, you know, S&D Major Maniac, he plays S&D, this guy doesn't know Respawn. But I knew, even now, I still feel like I know Respawn extremely, extremely well because it just has so much consistencies to it. So yeah, they gave me a chance. We did pretty well at Anaheim. And then after that event, we attended the LCQ just because of all the pro points we had. And instead of Spoof, we had Spacely. So it was me, Spacely, Proto, and Mox. And the LCQ qualified for Champs. And then we went to Champs. And we actually got top eight at that event, which is, I mean, for my first year competing, getting top eight at Champs, like that's considered pro.
That's wild,
so,
by the way.
So yeah, we were, and also another thing, that event, we were the only team to beat EG, like, because we beat them in pool play, because mm-hmm. we were in the same pool as Optic. It was us, Optic, EG, and Supremacy, I believe. Yeah, Supremacy. So, yeah, it was us four in the same group. Nobody expected us to even make it out of groups.
Y'all beat up.
No, they beat us 3-1. If they beat us on the Texas S&D, they would have qualified, but we beat them on Texas S&D, and that was when I was a sniper too, and there's still like you can go back and watch it and everything. I was literally hitting insane snipes in that map, but if they would have beat us on that map, I think they would have actually qualified because they would have 3-0'd us, and EG wouldn't have been able to even qualify even if they beat them. Maybe
that's right. There was like a crazy like three-way tie in the pool, and then did not go well.
We were playing Supremacy when EG and Optic were playing like on like the little main stage, because this was in Columbus, and we like 3-0'd Supremacy or whatever it was, and we stood up. And then we look to the right, and it shows like the sign of like 3-0 EG. I'm like, and everybody's like, Optic's out, like. Optics out. We're like, wait, nah, you're trolling. Like, you're joking. Like, they're not actually like out. And yeah, they didn't end up qualifying for pools. I think if they beat us in S&D, they would have, but I don't know. So yeah, like we ended up placing top eight at Champs, and then yeah, we went into BO4 with 5v5. It was me, basically, Mox, Nagafin, and Havoc. We represented Straight Ripping going into that first event in Vegas. And when BO4 came out, that was really my first game competing with a team like I was super comfortable with. I felt like they all had a good understanding of the game mode, so there was nothing for me to like really teach off the rip. And I didn't have to like – I could just really like worry about myself and understand the game for myself. And that game mode, fundamentally, I felt like I picked up so fast, which is a good reason why – our team was so good in like initial 2Ks, and even like on Gen G4 when we picked up Dylan, and what Dylan brought to the table was the same thing that I brought. He just knew how to understand the game really well fundamentally, and he was just a really good slayer as well. So yeah, like when it comes to respawn, I think learning and picking up the games is something in like how they work, and because each game, as you go every year, it's going to be different. There's going to be consistencies. It's going to be like team based, but spawns, the mechanics of the game are always going to be different. So yeah, I mean, World War II, obviously, was my first year competing. Black Ops 4 was really my first year competing in like a sense of, yeah, like I can do something from here. World War II was like I was in the trenches in open bracket for like 5 months. But yeah, I mean, we had a really good Gen G was a great time. We had a pretty good season. We should have done a lot better at champs that year. I mean, some people were even predicting us to get like top four, even win that event, and we just went there and just didn't show up.
You guys are right up there at that year during Black Ops 4, and then, you know, sometimes that's the way she goes.
You know, Mike, one part of that story that I find really interesting. So you mentioned 2 weeks before that Anaheim event, you didn't have a team, or you weren't on a team at the time. If you don't end up finding a team at that event, do you think your career and your life goes in a drastically different direction, or would you have just probably found a different group to play with at the next event?
Well, the thing is for me is I always believed in myself, and I always knew what I brought to the table, and I knew I could compete at the highest level. It's just that I was in a position where literally nobody was giving me a chance, literally nobody. And I mean, I could have played with probably a few different teams, but they weren't at a level. I mean, it's not egotistical or anything like that. It was just, I just didn't believe that we could accomplish anything together. Like, we could maybe show up and do well or okay. But I mean, my mindset is always, I want to win over anything. And if I don't think I have a chance of winning with that team, then I'm not going to play with them. So there was probably like, I can't think of right now if there was, I don't even think there was, like, literally nobody was giving me a chance. Nobody was hitting me up. So yeah, if I didn't end up getting a team, my life really could have took a completely different turn. But I think with the release of Black Ops 4, I still would have tried to make something happen. I mean, and I didn't know at the time it was going to switch to 5v5. So, I mean, that switch, and with that release of that game, I think I would have tried to give, you know, my all into. It's just at that time, 2 weeks before Anaheim, I really thought like this was the end of me, like, really trying to compete in Call of Duty.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting story, because that's, you know, that belief in yourself is so critical, because I think that people from a distance look at you know, pro COD players or pros in probably anything, esports, traditional sports, whatever, and think, oh yeah, they were probably just, you know, it was always obvious or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, like, it's that mental toughness and that ability to believe in yourself and fight through the adversity and the downtimes, and stick with it, you know, until you get to the point where you've quote unquote made it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's great to hear those stories. We were talking, we were talking to somebody recently, about like a content role. And this was somebody that, you know, was at a point in their, you know, in what they were doing, where they have to decide like whether they want to continue pursuing the CDL, you know, and, you know, what we said sort of to each other, Ashley and I, and to this person, is like, it's not for us to say when that time is for somebody, right? Like, if somebody believes that they, you know, that they can make it at whatever they're doing, they gotta keep at it, right? At the end of the day, like, there's a self-awareness element to it too, yep. Right? Like, you know, you obviously were correct that was the right path for you. But it's great to hear that story, man. I love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I have one quick question before we move on from that, just to kind of go back to something you said, Mike, when you were kind of on your come up and you said you knew that you were like destined, or maybe not destined, maybe that's a little corny, but like, you knew that you were good enough to compete at the highest level, which, like, it's obvious now, but at the time you really knew. I see a lot of AMs on Twitter, or, you know, wherever it is, asking pros questions like, how did you get noticed? Like, I know I'm good enough, but sometimes, I mean, you know how it goes. You go to the open bracket with a, you know, a team on 2 weeks notice, who knows what can happen. Yep. How did Mox reach out to you? Were you guys kind of on the similar trajectory at the time? And then you just kind of found your duo to get recognized with, or like, what, like, I guess, what advice would you give to an amateur player who's like, I know I'm good enough, or I believe that I'm good enough, I just need the right people around me? How is it luck? Is it skill? How do you get there? If you're to give advice to an amateur player,
I think luck maybe plays a little bit in it. Skill obviously plays a big role in it. And for me, the reason why I like would bleed to myself so much and all that is because, I mean, even in like Black Ops 3 and AW and IW, when I was playing all these wagers and tournaments, things like that, I would be playing these pro players at the time in a lot of these tournaments, a lot of these wagers, and just doing my thing. Like, I was just, you know, I was absolutely, you know, just doing my thing and, like, you know, playing extremely, extremely well, like, especially for the players that I was playing with at the time. So, like, in my head, like, I just knew, like, I could play against or with these players and do very well. So I think luck, yeah, it can maybe play a role, but it's really about the skill and how you present yourself and building those relationships with other players. I see a lot of amateur players, challenger players, whatever you want to call them. And I think one thing a lot of people do wrong is they go to an event, things don't go well, they trash talk each other, they go behind each other's back, they talk trash to other people about how their teammates play, things like that. People even do this in the pro scene. I was never that kind of person. I stuck with the team that, like I said, Teddy, Rambi, Mutex. We played 2 to 3 events together. And then after that, it was Anaheim. And that's how I got on my new team. I never talked trash to those players, about those players, or with other players. And even in the pro scene, I never went behind my teammates' back. And I think at the end of the day, you're a team. You win, you lose as a team. And the one thing... The one advice I would give to like amateur players or people trying to come up is to build those relationships and don't burn bridges. Like, just if things don't go your way as a team, then maybe it's time to obviously adventure off on yourself and find a team that really suits you. But a lot of these amateur players, they've gone through their circles. They just talk trash. They burn a lot of bridges. And I mean, that gets back to people. And I mean, over time, you just don't look, it's just not a good look on your character. And at the end of the day, no matter how good you are, nobody wants to play with a player or a person that just like is just, that is like that. Like, at the end of the day, you could be super good, but if you're not a good teammate, you're not a good person outside of the game, it's only just a matter of time before you're just trying to look for the next team.
That's one thing that's really important to us here too, Rocker. I mean, I think maybe when I gave you our whole spiel in year one, when you apparently already knew who you were joining, I'm just kidding. But
that was after.
A little bitter.
Yeah, she is. That was after. Okay.
Okay. That makes it, yeah. The minute we hung up, you knew the team you were going to.
Two days later.
We only have one conversation. I don't think we pushed farther in either direction. But I'm so glad we did this year and we got you on the team. And one of the things I actually noticed in our first, like, I guess, like, get to know you session, like, I was asking you a bunch of questions for Media Day, which, apologies for that long day.
It's okay.
We got so much great content out of that they've been seen on the channel here. But I really like got the vibe from you that you are like this like focused individual. Like, you have like what it takes to like, yeah, you're cracked, you're good at the game, you have really good like mechanics and your aim is really good, but like you also fundamentally understand the game on a different level. And even like as someone who's been watching and obviously following really closely for years, like I learned something and that was, you know, able to translate the content, which I was most excited about. But it really like rang true to me that you really understand the game Call of Duty. And I feel like intrinsically all of our players on this Rocker lineup for 2021 have that same vibe too. Like, it's not just about ego challenge everything and holding a lane or, you know, baiting your teammates so your KD looks a little nicer at the end of the day. It's all about like how you guys are playing as a team. And I think that's hopefully going to get across this season or this next season. One thing I kind of wanted to bring up, definitely. So you're going to turn into Coach Major Maniac, but only for one small event on December 11th called the Code Bowl. So it's the Call of Duty Endowment charity. It's an annual charity event that happens. It's actually going to be happening just before the Army and Navy football game. If you guys don't know what Call of Duty Endowment is, I've known of them for a long time. I actually just bought their in-game pack on Cold War, but they're a charity that helps raise awareness for veteran employment opportunities. All money raised for this charity event goes towards U.S. and U.K. military to place veterans into jobs after their service is complete, which is amazing, which I think is awesome. So, but you are going to be coaching a team in that event on December 11th. Who's your roster? You're going to have Nick Merckx, Swag, and two service members. I mean, you got a lineup. I haven't seen the other teams, but you... You got a lineup. What's going on?
Yeah, I haven't seen the other teams either, but that's a good looking lineup for sure. Very good looking lineup. I've known Nick for a long time. I've actually known Swag for a good bit. We've crossed paths. He's just a really cool guy. So you know, I got love for him as well. So yeah, I think that's just a really, really cool thing that we're gonna do. And I honestly didn't know my content creators until earlier, a little bit ago, actually. So yeah, knowing I have Nick and Swag will be fun, and then yeah, obviously having the service members will be an even cooler experience.
Yeah, and I think like what my point here is, I think it's really gonna translate like how you explain things, like how you just explained control earlier. Like I think your team is gonna have a leg up when it comes to just knowing what to do and where to be. Because that's amazing. And yeah, we're super happy to be a part of, or have you be a part of, you know, the Call of Duty Endowment Code Bowl going down before the Army Navy game on December 11th. And your father is in the service still, right? Like active?
Yep. My dad is still active duty. He's currently colonel in the military or the Army. So yeah, I mean, I've been around the military my entire life. I have that military background in my family. So yeah, I'm super excited. I think it's a great thing. I mean, I've always followed like the Call of Duty Endowment and like what they've done, and like because they've been doing it for years, trying to put veterans into the quality, high quality jobs outside of the service. So I think it's an amazing thing that they're doing, and to be able to do these events along with that, I think is even cooler, and just to bring more awareness to it.
Yeah, I think.
Oh yeah, I'm excited about it.
Excited.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we're really excited to be able to support and have you be a part of that event on behalf of the organization. And you know, my wife comes from a military family. Her brother was in the Navy, and her grandfather and some other family members as well. So you know, huge respect for military families and the efforts and the sacrifices that they make. The Call of Duty Endowment does some great work, and pumped to have you be a part of it on our behalf.
Yeah, me too.
I'm excited to watch. I think it's going to be on the Call of Duty Twitch on December 11th, like I said, guys, so make sure to tune in and check that out. I'm excited to see how your team does. Nick Merckx, obviously, I mean, I think back, like, just even, like, knowing his trajectory, where he kind of came from, obviously came from Gears of War, started doing a lot of wagers, search and destroy stuff on Call of Duty, really started blowing up during Black Ops 3. So did you guys used to play wagers together, or how did it kind of go? Did you end up playing against each other, and you guys were eventually like, oh, we should team up, or how did that work?
So in AW, Advanced Warfare, I was playing wagers and like tournaments and things like that, like pretty much every night. And I played a wager against him and two other guys. I think it might have been, I don't know if it was Amps at the time, but it might have been Amps and someone else, Gage. And yeah, like when we played them, like we were just having, I mean, me and my buddies were just having a good time. We won all things like that. And I didn't realize, but like he was streaming. So like I went to his stream and was like just watching him, and was like, this guy's pretty funny. Like he's just some big brawlic dude. Like just kind of like he's pretty nasty at the game. And like he's just funny. Like he was just super real. And like I was just like, I was never like a really a fan of like watching streams or anything like that. But like I actually like sat in his stream and like I was enjoying it, and he was like super cool, and like I was typing and he was like, yo, we gotta play sometimes, things like that. And yeah, it kind of just happened pretty like organically. We just kind of just started talking, we started playing together, and Yeah, his come up has been amazing. I mean, I had messaged him like probably like a month or two ago, because congratulating him on his like his wedding and things like that. And I even told him like super proud of him, because a lot of people don't realize it, but I mean, me and him had numerous like nights, like just off stream, just me and him talking, just about all kinds of things, just life, things like that in general. And he's really like the vision that he had, he's completed and went far above and beyond that. So I'm just, yeah, like I got nothing but respect, and I'm just super proud of like what he's accomplished. He's just dominating right now. He's the head honcho of Twitch. Yeah, like literally.
He's literally killing it. I think I know he came from Gears of War, you know, before that, and who knows like what else he played before that. But like, I really feel like it's like when a Call of Duty zone is kind of at the top, which is awesome. I think, you know, especially with him too, like just from a content POV, he's obviously really good at all the games he put him into, but he is so community driven. Like you see the Familia. I mean, I think this was before the pandemic and everything, but he's having like barbecues and stuff with his Twitch. So it's like, that seems like so down to earth and just really like, you obviously can't have a barbecue with, you know, 100,000 people, but to try, you know, to try to make that connection, it's really cool. So I've got a couple questions from the chat, and then we'll end up letting you go here soon, because the Grid, the Rocket League, the Version 1 Rocket League team on Twitch, twitch.tv/version1gg, the Grid is happening single elimination, 16 teams. We played groups yesterday, we went 2-1, and today we're squaring off against PK, Pittsburgh Knights. Am I way wrong? Oh my God.
Sonics. The first round. But yeah. I think we play the winner. I don't have it in front of me. We play the winner of I think KCP and Kansas City Pioneers and Pittsburgh Knights.
Okay, that's maybe where I got mixed up, or I saw the wrong graphic at some point in time. But yeah, I'm excited for that matchup. Couple questions from the chat. Make sure to ask a question right now to get your last second questions in before we go. And if you're listening and not watching live, that's okay, man. You're along for the ride. Shivani in the chat wants to know, very curious, on the Rocker squad, who is your duo if you have one?
That's a tough one. I think it would have to be Preston.
Yeah.
It has to be Preston. I mean, me and Preston, I've known Preston since like the beginning of Black Ops 3. I mean, we've talked at all the events that I've like traveled to, even in Black Ops 4. He was just showing love all the time. Him and especially Crowder. Crowder and him are good friends, and obviously we're all still good friends. So him and Crowder have always just showed nothing but love to me. And I appreciate that, just as you know, just it means a lot. So yeah, like Preston's definitely got to be my duo, especially because we, you know, from last year, all the things that, you know, I think me and him are super vocal, and he just like offsets my pace in game. Like he's super fast, but also understands the game like in the same fashion I do. I'm more of like a slow, methodical, like, you know, AR play style, but he's like that fast, racked, still fundamental playstyle, so it like offsets my pace. So I think it's really, really we complement each other in that way.
That's awesome, man. You do tend to see a lot of like AR and sub duos, but you guys do also kind of come with that. Like every pro player at this level understands the game fundamentally, but it seems like you guys are really in tune with each other, which is super awesome. Shivani in the chat responds, love that. P-Dog and Mike are nasty, which is true.
Love that.
So coach, assistant coach, lead analyst, Jake, AKA Repin in the chat. Somebody verify this man on Twitter. Jeez.
Yes. Please.
He said, Mike, if you had to yell for the rest of your life or whisper for the rest of your life, even on main stage, which would you pick?
It'd probably have to be. Some people say like, it might not seem like it, but my family always says I talk loud anyway. So it'd probably have to be yell. Like, you know, you gotta be heard. It'd probably ruin my voice box, but my vocal cords, but I have to be yelling, I think.
Dang, I think I would choose whisper. You would yell just so you get your point across. I mean, otherwise, how would they hear your call outs?
Actually, I don't know. That's a hard one. If it was on main stage too, I think I'd have to choose yelling if we're choosing like in everything.
Or if you have to, how like dedicated would your teammates be if they all also agreed to whisper? on main stage, then like just imagine like the list.
Then I'd probably choose Whisper. I'd probably choose Whisper.
Makes sense to me. One
saw, comment, like, close up to the mic.
Yeah, like dude, it'll be like Call of Duty Call Out ASMR. That's a content idea. Write that down, somebody. Giovanni asked, content question, are we getting a series like Saga for this new year? Maybe. It's possible. Anything's possible. Yes. We have big plans. Shout out Joe Fries.
Shout out Joe.
One more question. This is just for me. How's it been going down with the guys? Obviously, you guys are based in Dallas for this year. How's that going? What's it like? Do you guys hang out much now that the game is out? Are you guys just, you know, in your apartments?
Well, now that the game is out, we're not obviously not hanging out as much because we're all just playing, everything like that. But like before the game dropped, when we were all just first moving in, yeah, we were obviously hanging out, getting food, everything like that, hitting the gym.
Awesome.
So yeah, like, I mean, me and Dill, we still get food a lot. Lamar gets food with us. We still do our thing, but with the game out, it's, you really only like do stuff at night. So it'd be like after scrims, but like just in general, like the apartment, the city or the, we're obviously in Dallas, but the little neighborhood that we are in is like super nice. I'm like really happy with it. I love my apartment and we're in a really good area. It's safe. You know, there's a lot, it's very convenient with like what's around us. Easy to get like around. I have my car out here as well. So like just hopping on like the, one of the toll roads or whatever, if I need to go somewhere is like super easy. So yeah, like just the convenience of it. The environment, everything like that is super nice. So
the one thing I love Minnesota, but I did live in Texas, in Dallas area for 2 years. The only thing I miss, them freeways though. They're so nice. There's
they're so nice.
Over years, they're so smooth. It's just it's great. No problem.
Yeah, you can just get from point A to point B so fast. Like you just
make sure you have the toll tag though, because they'll be sending you something in the mail. Yeah. They go nuts down there. All right, guys, I have a bunch of stuff to plug. Well, actually, first and foremost, Mike, Major Maniac, where can we find you? Twitter, Twitch, what are they?
All Major Maniac.
Major Maniac, easy enough.
Major Maniac.
We put his link down.
Except for my YouTube. My YouTube is Major Maniac HD, which I never could get changed. But
I'm subbing immediately. You got that HD, and that's an old school YouTube
link. Yeah, I know. I need to start posting more videos. Like, yes. I haven't posted in a long time, and it was actually something I've been thinking about like the last like 2 days, is because I do have like a few video ideas in mind. I just need to.
Well, if you need help doing them, I'm your person. We got you. Okay. We're going to be doing a ton of content with you guys. We're excited to start uploading that. So guys, make sure to check out Major Maniac if you haven't already. His stream's insane. Definitely. I'm going to give you so many things to watch, guys. This is my job as the director of content. Make sure to check out the S&D upload that we uploaded recently of Major Maniac playing with the squad in an S&D tournament. He went off, spoiler alert, ace in the first round. That's where you kill all four people on the enemy team. We also have the grid broadcast on the version 1 GG Twitch, where our Rocket League team, hoping we play well. We're coming off a pretty decent stint at regionals, so that's really cool. Going to be keeping up with that. Obviously, on December 11th, there is the Code Bowl, the Call of Duty Endowment charity tournament stream thing. Major Maniac's going to be coaching Nick, Merck, Swag, and two service members. Listen, without even seeing any of the other teams, you guys have won. Good luck. Have fun. And then also tonight, listen, I got stuff for y'all to watch. Tonight, Attach is actually going to be on a charity stream as well. It's an Amplify fundraiser for the HBCU Esports League. Erin Ashley Simon, you guys know her. She was on the podcast a month or two ago. Her and 300 Entertainment and eFuse are teaming up to play some Warzone together with Attach for an Amplify fundraiser for the HBCU Esports League. So it's going to be Erin Ashley Simon, rapper T-Shine, musician Cleo Thomas, and Attach playing Warzone. You guys know the vibes. Dylan is amazing. And that broadcast is going to be going down on Erin Ashley Simon's Twitch. It's Erin A. Simon. That's her Twitch. So I think that's all my stuff.
Nailed it. Did you give One WeWork take. A shout out?
Shout out WeWork from a year ago. Shout out.
Nah, it's a flashback. I haven't been to WeWork in a while.
We were giving WeWork shout-outs on the podcast for about 4 months.
Good memories of the WeWork office.
Good memories, yes. That was it was pretty cool because it was in downtown and we could see US Bank and she looked so pretty. Oh my gosh. All right, Mike. Well, we'll let you go. I hope you have a great night. Thanks so much for coming on. Thank you so much for listening or watching. If you are, make sure to subscribe, like, rate. I've given you too many call to actions at the end here. Just live your life. I'm sorry.
Do all the stuff.
Pick a thing, do all the stuff. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll catch you next time.